Hi, Bomb Squad. You're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb, and I'm your host, Carrie Diamond. Each week, we talk to the most inspiring women in and around the world of food. First, let's thank our sponsor, Hansenbrook Farm Pasture-Raised Organic Eggs. Hansenbrook Farm's secret to making rich, flavorful eggs is simple. The most possible space, the best possible feed, and lots of love. It's a healthy and humane recipe that makes your omelets, cakes, custards, and everything in between taste better. To learn more and to find their eggs, visit hansenbrookfarm.com. I'm so happy to welcome today's guest back to Radio Cherry Bomb. It's Chef Deborah Van Trees of Twisted Soul Cookhouse and Pours, the fun Atlanta restaurant where she serves up her global soul food to a happy, diverse clientele. For 20 years, Deborah worked as a flight attendant and as a chef, juggling two demanding careers before finally jumping into the food world full-time. She's an inspiring, upbeat personality who is finally getting the national recognition she deserves. Everyone from the New York Times to Guy Fieri has their eyes on her. We should also mention that Deborah is part of the Mother Hen Chef Collective of our sponsor, Hansenbrook Farm. When I asked Deborah why the world is finally paying attention to her, she gave a modest answer. I think it's just time for us females to shine. So grab your sunglasses and settle in for my talk with Chef Deborah Van Trees. Before we get started, let's hear a word from Hansenbrook Farm. Hansenbrook Farm believes that organic and pastured is the way to go when it comes to eggs. Pasture-raised means better lives for hens, better lives for small farmers, and better eggs for you. It's also better for the chefs who depend on rich, flavorful eggs. Hansenbrook Farm's own flock of amazing chefs, their mother hens, count on it. Janine Booth is a mother hen. She's the Australian chef behind the Southern-inspired Root and Bone restaurants in New York City and Miami. Want to learn how Chef Janine makes her sweet corn spoon bread? The ingredients include Hansenbrook Farm eggs, some scallions, sharp cheddar cheese, and a touch of heavy cream. Or if you're like me and you're obsessed with deviled eggs, you can recreate her drunken deviled eggs. Chef Janine combines homemade pickled beets with Hansenbrook Farm's flavorful yolks to put a fresh, tangy spin on a classic party favorite. You can find Chef Janine's delicious egg-centric recipes and videos on hansenbrookfarm.com. Where can you find Hansenbrook Farm organic pasture-raised eggs? At Publix, Kroger, Sprouts Farmers Market, Fresh Direct, and many natural food stores across the country. Let's welcome Chef Deborah Van Trees. We're so excited to have you back.
Glad to be back.
Do you remember when you were first on Radio Cherry Bomb?
I certainly do.
You had just done a killer event at the James Beard House.
Yeah, it's almost a year exactly.
Tell us what you did there.
It was a historical event for us. I paired with a couple of other African-American chefs, one chef and one mixologist, and presented all of us our first dinner at the James Beard House. We're all from Atlanta. You know, we did a soul food inspired menu and paired it with cocktails, which had not been done. Each course was paired with cocktails crafted by the mixologist Tiffany Berrier. And we had a good old time.
And that's how we got to meet Tiffany, too.
Yes.
And I'm kind of laughing thinking about that recording because Tiffany had laryngitis.
Tiffany had lost her voice. Yeah, she had had too much fun at the James Beard House.
So it was that. I thought maybe it was all the pressure.
No, it was fun. It was fun and cocktails.
Say no more. And then we were so lucky because we got to see you again when we did the Future of Food tour.
Yes.
And Atlanta was the first city we went to. And yes. It's funny, I didn't really know many people in Atlanta until I had met you and Tiffany, and I had known Chef Ann Quattrano for a while. So it was such a nice event. It was just a great way to like really kind of get a better understanding of the Atlanta food scene.
Yeah, it was a great event, and it was also helpful for us because quite often we don't take advantage of what our resources are within this city. Yeah, you know, we get so busy, you know, doing our everyday things and you know, with the spotlight on you, and if, as it gets bigger, you forget sometime about all the local talent and all the resources you have at home. So it was an opportunity for us to meet people who I've heard about, but never got a chance to meet, you know, in organizations, you know, that we're doing good in the community.
And Tiffany had full command of her vocal cords.
Yes, she did. Yes,
that she evening did. She gave a great talk about the future of drinking.
Yes.
She urged everybody to be more adventurous with what they try. We all got to meet Jen Heidinger Kendrick, who has that amazing organization, The Giving Kitchen. For those who don't know it, it's basically an organization that raises money for people in the restaurant industry who are in distress.
Yes.
Because of an illness, a death in the family, an accident. And, you know, when you're living paycheck to paycheck, things are so tenuous.
Yes. And you know, one issue is catastrophic.
Exactly. It's really remarkable. And it's expanding now beyond the Atlanta region.
Yes.
Into other parts of Georgia. And I was so floored to learn about them and the work that they do. And it's one of those things where you're like, God, you wish the whole restaurant industry could just come together and every state could have something like that.
Yeah, it's a pretty inspiring story. And it is definitely a story of sadness, you know, and good that came out of a situation that wasn't good. We're real grateful to them.
Yeah. The whole idea of a safety net for restaurant workers, because I'm sure, you know, you deal with this every day. It's just, you want to pay your staff so much.
Yes.
But the reality is, like, as the owner, I'm sure you're the first one to not get paid when there's not money. You know, I don't know if you've gone through that.
I've definitely gone through that. Yes.
And it's so hard. I mean, you really want to take care of your workers. And I don't know, the food and the restaurant industry is a tough one.
It is. It's like, you know, there's many people who work very hard. Yeah, but there's only so much that the consumer will pay for the food. And, you know, it's a catch-22 there.
Yeah. So tell us about your place. After the event was over in Atlanta, we all got in our cars and drove to your place. And it was so much fun to see that. And you spoiled us rotten while we were there. So tell us more.
So we, you know, now we've been open a little bit over 2 years. Very busy. It's great to see. Very diverse clientele and happy people, which is good. You know, I set out to do something a little bit different, you know, with globally inspired soul food. We got people, black, white, blue, green, LGBT community. And we try to do, you know, activities or do events, sponsor events that continue to promote that. I think it's a good place to start with us all fellowshipping, you know, amongst each other. You know, getting to know each other. Food always works really well, and cocktails also. You know, so we're doing real well. We've had a lot of press. You know, we've
been doing cooking shows. You're blowing up these days.
Yeah, which has been kind of fun. You know, I'm actually enjoying some of the shows I've been on, things I've said, I will never do that. And then I find myself in the middle of it. But it's been great, and it's been great for the business. So I'm hoping in the future to do a cookbook, working on that real hard. Let's see, what else?
And for all you cookbook publishers out there, jump on that.
Definitely, definitely.
Deborah is hot.
Real close to it being ready.
Tell us what you mean by global soul food. Give us some examples.
For me, my background, of course, was for years as a flight attendant. And with that being said, you know, I got to experience a lot of cuisine. I also got to live in quite a few countries. So I got to experience cuisines firsthand in homes.
You what know, were some favorites?
One of my favorites, and people think it's real strange, was in Spain, paella, but it was made with macaroni. And it was one of those where you just happen to go by one weekday and dinner's on the table and, you know, I'm asked to join. Of course, I've never seen that before, you know, so it was interesting to try and it was absolutely excellent. You know, being over in Beijing, egg drop soup, you know, done with different twist, you know, with different things added to it was another thing that, you know, I've taken back and played with that just a little bit. You know, so all of these things, once I taste them, you know, they are in my memory. And I try to take those with the restaurant and expand on them a little bit and utilize them. It's comfort foods of different places, you know, it kind of comfort food of the world meets Deborah in the South type thing.
Flight attendant is a tough job.
It is a tough job.
You went from one tough job to another tough job.
To another tough job, yep.
How did you wind up becoming a flight attendant?
I was desperately trying to get out of Kansas City, Missouri. Yeah, and the opportunity presented itself, and I thought, I am out of here. And did not realize at that point how it would open up worlds for me. And to be honest, you know, I did it for a while, but even now there's experiences that I depend on from back then that I still utilize today.
Give us some examples.
One big one is actually dealing with customers. That's a huge thing. You know, being an international flight attendant, you're dealing with people in different cultures, you know, from all over the world. And one thing that's offensive in one culture is not in another, but you have to learn those things. So quite often, you know, I tell my staff, my service staff, about the expectations of service and the level of service that comes to be expected in different places where you go, you know, and kindness, which is universal, is something that I've learned also. You know, it works. A smile works no matter where you're at.
So how did the transition happen from flight attendant to chef?
It was, you know, I think pretty natural transition. Maybe little known fact is that flight attendants love to cook because we love to dine. You know, what you do on a layover, you shop, you dine, and you have some cocktails. So it was somewhat natural. You know, we're flying with people who are also of all types of cultures and backgrounds. A lot of downtime we'd spend talking about recipes or what you're going to cook when you get home, what you're going to eat on the layover.
What was your favorite place for a layover?
Argentina was a good one, but so is Brazil. I did love Spain. Yeah, I love Spain. That was some of the good food. You know, but that transition was not as difficult as I imagined because I did love food and I had such a broad knowledge. You know, the decision to go to culinary school came because the flight attendants went on strike and I wanted something that gave me more control over my own livelihood. And that was a talent that I thought I could capitalize on. So I decided to go to culinary school and kind of straddled the fence for a while. You know, I was flying a little, cooking a lot, flying a little, cooking a lot. But it worked for me, you know, and at a point I decided, let's just stop this and focus.
Where did you go to culinary school?
I went to culinary school at the Art Institute in Atlanta.
And do you come from a family of good cooks?
I come from a family of incredible cooks.
Ooh.
And I utilize, you know, their recipes on the menu. I like to pay homage to them quite often.
Tell us who some of the good cooks were and what their specialties were.
My mom, incredible cook. She could do almost anything. My dad was barbecue guy,
ooh,
you know, anything on the grill. And he taught me real well. So there's times I do baby back ribs. I do a sweet tea baby back rib on the menu. It's marinated in sweet tea. Then I play with the barbecue sauce where it's sweet tea in it also.
What was your mom known for?
My mom, just about everything. But there's a particular cookie and it's on the menu. It stays on there. It's a chocolate chip cookie that is just to die for. We bake them to order in a little cast iron skillet and top it with bourbon ice cream, and it's absolutely delicious.
It's a cookie in a little skillet. Is it a little undercooked? Skillet.
Yes,
love
a nice
that.
Soft cookie, not a hard one. It comes out hot. Yeah.
So you are blowing up right now.
A little bit, yes.
We're reading about you in the New York Times. You've got endorsements. You're on Hulu. You're on Guy Fieri's show, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Major. What's going on? Why do you think this is, why are you having a moment?
There's a lot of things coming into play, but I kind of think it's time for the underdogs, you know? It's time for the underdogs. You know, there's a broad interest, you know, all the way across the board in women and what women are doing. Women have been doing these things for years. So it's kind of overdue that we do get some of that attention. We are beginning to take root a little bit more and people are paying attention. It doesn't hurt that I've got a big voice. You know, I talk a lot. You know, I'm not ashamed of talking about it and people listen. And I'm pretty good at what I do. You know, decided early on not to be ashamed of the cooking of my heritage, which was kind of unheard of. When we went to culinary school, everybody wanted to do French cooking. That's all you knew. That's, you know, if you weren't doing that, you weren't cooking. And so it made me think, well, what have I been eating? Or what have my parents been doing all this time? So I think I've brought a new light to a type of cuisine that had been left behind, you know, which is cuisines of comfort. And I think it's just time for us females to shine.
We couldn't agree more. Obviously. We need to go back to your flight attendant days, though. So flight attendants are on strike. You go to culinary school. Mm-hmm. So how did you make the leap after that to full-time chef?
Well, the flight attendant position was pretty strange, and it still is. It gives you a lot of flexibility after you've been there for a while. You know, that seniority thing comes into play. And so I was fairly senior. The only thing is that the rules are constantly changing. So you have to learn how to make them work best for you. At the time that I entered culinary school, I was able to reduce my schedule, my hours, and make it through school full time. And once I came out, it was the same thing. I would fly a minimal amount of hours. And I did that for about 20 years, to be honest. You know, through that time, I got a divorce. I had a daughter, so I was a single parent. And one of the big reasons I held on to it was so that I had benefits, you know, so that my daughter had insurance if something were to happen to her. So I had life insurance, you know, so we were covered. And, you know, once she got of age, you know, I made the decision, okay, it's time for you to just go full force into what you want to do. So I did a balancing act for over 20 years.
Wow.
You know, if I had to fly, I had to fly.
So what were you doing, like private chefing, catering?
Private chefing and catering.
Okay.
I started with a restaurant, but after about 2 years and the divorce and all, I realized I can't do
so this. You owned your own restaurant.
Yes.
And we're going through all that. Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it's was an inspiration now for me to tell other people that you can still do it.
You had a lot on your plate.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's what we women do. We have a lot on our plate. You know, and when we have children, it's even more so. So at that particular time for me, it was the responsible thing to do. I didn't have a great support system in Atlanta. So I did what I had to do in private chef, catering, you know, so I still kept my foot in the door, kept that door cracked until I was ready to go full speed ahead, you know, but I never lost sight of this is a vision that I plan on fulfilling at some point in time.
What made you decide to get back into the restaurant ownership game?
Never forgot the restaurant ownership game. You know, I just put it on hold for just a little while. And I got to a point where the catering was getting so big, it made no sense to continue to do it the way that I had been doing it. I was operating out of a church kitchen, and it was great, but it was time for me to fulfill my dream. My daughter, she was grown at that point, and I had no hesitation in terms of, okay, you're going to quit one job that you have been at for years to start up something else. And I just went for it. I'm like, to me, the best investment is to invest in you.
So let's talk about that. How did you finance the operation?
I had saved quite a bit of money, and I had the money. So I financed myself.
It's amazing to me how many women we talk to who do that.
Well,
they don't get the bank
loans.
Yeah. They don't get...
I tried
that
route a couple of times, and, you know, I'm not going to give you too many times to tell me no. And I believed in myself. So I thought about it, and I'm like, okay, you've got money sitting there. Maybe it's not enough, but it'll get you started, and you keep going. And it's time. You know, my faith was stronger than my fear. And I just put one foot in the other and said, okay, let's do this.
What do you think you're on this planet to do, ultimately?
You know, I used to say, oh, I'm here to, I'm doing what I was meant to do, cook. But it has gone further than that. I think I'm here also to help others. There's a lot we can do with food. And it's the concept of it gets bigger and bigger. You know, I started out with the fellowship of it and a good place to talk, to start conversation. You know, now I've gone into... you know, the source of it and where it comes from. And now that's gone into some of the social issues, you know, and those who don't have food. and also those who want to do what I want to do or what I'm doing and just don't know how to get there. So I'm here for a lot of reasons. It's just that food is the way I'm going to do it. I want to educate my community. I want us to learn how to eat better, understand the association between some of the health issues we have and the food that we're putting in our body, as well as, you know, being a beacon that they know, okay, you know, yes, you can be this chef, because there was no one for me to follow when I decided to do this. So it's like I want to be the mentor to whoever I can be, and the hope and the sunshine for whoever I can be.
It's interesting about the mentor thing. I think about that a lot too, and just what a mentor even means. And I don't feel like I ever had anybody, but to me, I always thought it was somebody who literally would like take your hand and share all the secrets and the path.
Yeah.
And I think some people have that, but I think for a lot of us, we don't. And I want to come up with a term for this, but you sort of look to people to be mentors who don't know they're your mentors.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
You take bits and pieces from people you read about in the press or hear an interview with, and you just kind of cobble it together for yourself.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah. I agree. You know, because there's so many paths to take. Idea of one person having to, you know, this way or no way answer is, of course, ludicrous.
But sometimes I do think there's got to be an easier way. One of the commonalities among women who come on the show, the finance part, like I talked about, a lot of women tend to self-finance, put everything, like Amshika. I don't know, Amshika Alberini, who you'll meet. Mm-hmm. You're coming to Jubilee, which I'm so thrilled about. But you'll meet Amshika. She put everything on her credit cards. She came here from Thailand and, you know, really didn't have a lot. But it's just amazing to hear that over and over again. And just women who open a restaurant, start a food business, figure out all their own best practices.
Yeah.
You know, nobody trained them, mentored them, showed them the way, but they still managed to figure it out.
Yeah. I think, you know, we have to do better as women to build a stronger financial network that supports us a little bit more. The downside is sometimes I do think we women get to a position, a higher place, and we forget what it was like for us, you know, that we're so scared that only a few of us can get there. And so we start guarding that position. And sometimes we can be our own worst enemies when we do that.
But don't you think that's understandable? I mean, when you look at, you know, it really was white men in this food industry who were given the attention. I mean, still given the attention, the media.
Yeah.
The investor money, the prizes, all of that. Mm-hmm. So it did seem like there was less for everybody else. And if you just happen to be a woman, a person of color, you know, and made it.
Yeah. You're holding on for dear life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But that's changed.
Yeah. It's like, I think we have to get it in our head that it doesn't have, it's room for more than one. I think that's the mentality. We felt like they were doing us a favor if you lifted us up there with you. And that's not the favor. It's usually that's the seat you deserve to be at. You probably work twice as hard to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And once you're there, I think, as I'd say, there's a responsibility to this blessing. And I'm like, we have to be more responsible once we get there and figuring out how do we get others there like us.
Yeah. But I think it's everybody's responsibility.
Yeah, it is.
You know, it's people who are still in the positions of power. It's the people who publish cookbooks. It's the people who make decisions about who gets a TV show or who gets an article or whatnot. I think we all have to be invested in everyone's success today.
Yeah, and we have to be very deliberate about it.
This episode is brought to you by MOFAD, the Museum of Food and Drink. Featuring a variety of interactive displays, MOFAD encourages eaters of all ages to be curious about food. The museum currently operates MOFAD Lab, a 5,000-square-foot experimental space in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, where Chow, making the Chinese-American restaurant, is currently on show until the end of March 2019. This exhibition celebrates the birth and evolution of Chinese-American restaurants, tracing their nearly 170-year history and sparking conversations about food culture, immigration, and what it means to be American. It highlights the evolution timeline of Chinese-American restaurant menus, dating back to 1910, and also highlights a tasting section where participants get to enjoy tastings created by the country's most talented chefs who specialize in Chinese-American cuisine. Make sure you check out Chow while you still can. The exhibition closes at the end of March 2019. Check out MOFAD's tastings and extensive event calendar at mofad.org/events.
Hi, everybody. It's Jess. Time for a little housekeeping. Jubilee is 1 month away. Did you hear Samin Nosrat of Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat is one of our speakers? And the legendary Mater Joffrey? We're announcing the lineup all this week, so be sure to check it out. You can snag a ticket at cherrybomb.com/Jubilee2019 before they're sold out. Jubilee will take place Sunday, April 7th at the Brooklyn Expo. We would love to see you there.
Thanks, Jess. Let's get back to my conversation with Deborah Van Treese. Back to Jubilee. I'm so excited you're going to be at Jubilee.
I'm excited.
For anyone who's listening, Deborah is going to be there. She's a first timer. So I want you all to look for her and go say hi. And if you've been there before, you can kind of tell her the ropes.
Yeah, give me a hug, please.
Absolutely. You're going to meet so many great people.
I am looking so forward to
it. I'm really excited. I'll be running around like a crazy person.
Of course.
So, but I'll see you a few times throughout the day, no doubt. What are you doing while you're in New York City?
Playing with eggs, that's for sure.
You're working with our pals.
Yes.
Who are graciously supporting the show this season.
Yeah, yeah. So Handsome Brook Farm, pasture-raised organic eggs.
Yep.
I'm working with them. You know, love their product, love the flavor of their product, love what they're doing. You know, I like that they're working with small farms, you know, and I get a smile on my face, you know, when I think about, you know, what they're doing with the hens and the eggs. And I have this vision of happy hens, like chilling out in the fields under the sun. You know, I'm like looking up with their glasses on, like, hey, this is all right. So I'm real excited to be working with them.
They're putting out a great product. They're trying to educate the consumer. You know, they're not, I think that's so important today because just understanding what you eat, what goes into what you
eat. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Understanding it goes into you, you know. And become that.
We have some of their eggs in the fridge, and we had shakshuka for lunch yesterday. Have you made that yet?
No, I haven't.
It's a Middle Eastern dish, and it's a tomato-based sauce, and you know it. You kind of like poach the eggs in it. But you guys ate all the eggs. I'm looking at Jess, our producer. So I go out there, I'm like doing other work, and I was the last to eat. And there was like one measly like spoonful of tomato sauce and not a single egg left. I was like, thanks, everybody.
Oh, I'm
over.
So sorry.
That's okay. There are more eggs in there. I can make some eggs. But we make lunch here every day, which is really nice.
Because
You know, I'm on a big or maybe you don't. I'm on a big sustainability kick, and just trying to make sure we, you know, use less packaging.
Yes.
And when you do takeout, I mean, God bless takeout. I know it gets a lot of restaurants to the finish line. But you just wind up with so much packaging.
I agree.
And we're
I
here
agree.
Every day. I was like, we don't need to do takeout every day. We're a food magazine.
Yeah,
damn it.
I agree. I agree. I mean, we have the same issue in the restaurant. My last big move was the straws.
Yes.
You know,
good for you. You got rid of plastic straws. Excellent.
Them.
A lot of places still haven't.
Yeah. Well, I don't understand it, you know, because we're getting educated on that right now. And it's like I'm paying attention. And so, yeah, I couldn't wait. And now I'm trying to work on other things that we're packaging in.
It's
hard. Like the consumer still wants, you know, that nice, heavy duty, wasteful thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, can't we just put it in recycled paper and just keep it moving?
I know.
It's going to be the same thing. But
I know. And at Smith Canteen, we're trying to get everybody to convert to reusable cups, which has been a bit of a challenge. But I feel like every day, you know, we got the message out a little bit more and we offer a really generous discount. But it's kind of funny when you think about it, you'd know in like 2-3 years time, people are going to be coming to our restaurants and our establishments with their own takeout containers.
Yeah.
That's where this is headed.
And it's like, I've thought about, you know, even offering a discount, but then you have the health departments. you know, and their laws and their regulations. So they've got to catch up a little bit too.
We're actually going to have someone on the show from the New York City Department of Health because we want to talk about these very things. And I think it's going to be interesting over the next few years. I think restaurateurs are going to have to work way more closely with their individual departments of health. Because I think there was always sort of an adversarial relationship over the past few years, especially when letter grades came out. Do you have those in Atlanta? But it's going to have to be, like everything in life, it's going to have to be more about partnership
Well,
if we're
going to
save
be.
This planet.
It should be an educational process for the both of us. And I've spoken with them too. And, you know, are my own personal health inspector for our restaurant. You know, I told him we should not be afraid of you.
Right.
You know, we should look at you completely different and look forward to you coming in and helping us get to the place we need to be.
That's what I said to my team, because even for myself, it was a cause of so much stress and panic.
Yes.
And
yes.
I'm like, why is it like this? It doesn't have to be
like this.
It doesn't
make sense.
Yeah.
You know?
So we do like mock health inspections all the time to get everybody ready.
At the end of the day, we all want the same thing. So, I mean, I don't know any restaurateur that just doesn't want to serve healthy food and doesn't, I mean, you know, it's like that's
or who's
kind
looking
of
to hang a C in their window.
Exactly.
C is for just clothes.
Yeah.
Now.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm like, let's try to, you know, work together. I mean, Atlanta, you know, even had a little committee to try to help that.
That's great.
Where we do work a little bit better together.
That's great.
Yeah. We're not quite there yet.
But, no. You know, no.
It's a start. It's
absolutely.
A start.
Absolutely. And people are talking about it and a lot of people want to do better. And that's where it starts.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Eating anywhere fun while you're here?
Not
any
yet.
Time for that?
I tell you, I ate at the restaurant, which I don't even know the name, at William Vale Hotel, Italian restaurant.
How gorgeous is that hotel?
The hotel's beautiful. The views, like,
Did you go to the bar restaurant up top?
No, I haven't made it up top. I just went downstairs.
That's
and it
a
was
gorgeous
excellent.
Restaurant.
I ordered two entrees, okay? Like, all right, can I get a small dish of the pasta? No, okay, well, just give me the whole thing. But it was excellent.
Oh, my God.
It was excellent.
When you have a moment, and it's clear today, too, which is great.
Yeah, it's actually
go
beautiful.
Go all the way up to that restaurant on the top. The William Vale, I think, has some of the best views in New York City.
Okay. Yeah, I was amazed.
Definitely the best view in Brooklyn.
Yeah, because I had the balcony outside the room. Ugh. You know, it was cold, but I'm like, oh my God, this is really beautiful. Yeah. So this is my first time really hanging out in Brooklyn, and I really like it. I really like it. Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
Well, next time you come, well, not Jubilee, because like I said, we'll be a little cray-cray. Next time you come here, we can put a little tour together for you. There's so many amazing women doing like incredible food in Brooklyn.
That would
and
be
Brooklyn's so
cool.
Big, 2.5 million people.
Yeah, and I didn't realize that either, you know, until I took the ride over here. And I'm thinking, where are we going? You know, this morning I was walking and went the wrong way. So I probably walked 2 miles more than what I needed to. You know, but it was an enjoyable experience to see the neighborhood.
Yeah. Jubilee's going to be there, actually.
Oh,
if you walked in a certain direction, kind of like north from where you were, it's in a part of town called Greenpoint, which is right next to Williamsburg, where you're staying.
Okay.
But no, Brooklyn's incredible. And it's crazy these days. You could, you know, New York, Manhattan is so big and Brooklyn is so big.
Yeah.
You literally could come and just do Brooklyn.
Well,
and
that's
still not even
I'm
scratch
like
the surface.
For, yeah. I'm hoping like, okay, I've already called home and said, look, we're just coming to visit Brooklyn. Okay. I haven't even called my friends in Manhattan because I don't want to go there. Like, I'm not coming. So
I know you're not going to open a restaurant in Brooklyn, but are you thinking about a second place?
Definitely. There's a couple more concepts I want to do. Yeah, so I'm hoping maybe this year. I'm just putting it out there. This year is going to happen. You know, I'm going to at least find the space and get the groundwork in place to go with space number two.
And with other people's money?
Hopefully this time, yes.
Yeah. Banks, some investors.
Yeah, I think it's time.
Uh-huh.
I think
absolutely.
It's time.
Absolutely. Spring is not that far away. Anything new you put on the menu when springtime comes along?
Well, actually, I just changed the menu, anticipating spring. Yeah, so we've added some things. We went back to some things that we had on before. So one of the things that has been featured recently was a Southern Louis salad. And it was a play on the Crab Louis salad and the ladies at the tea parties back in the day. So we're doing it with it's an avocado hoe cake, and it's got poached lobster and poached lump crab and a beautiful poached shrimp. It has a corn relish where we're actually, you know, cutting the corn off the cob. So corn relish over arugula salad, and then it has a nice mango vinaigrette. So we've done that.
Oh, I want that right now.
This incredible lamb dish that we do with a cocoa rub that we make in-house. So it's a cocoa.
What do you mean by
crusted.
A cocoa rub?
We actually use cocoa, dark cocoa, a high-end cocoa, rubbed on the rack of lamb. And then we put it on an actual big green egg and char it, get some smoke flavor in it, and then we'll finish it in the oven. It has a beautiful cherry demi-glace that goes over it, and we're serving it with a goat cheese grit and some beautiful asparagus. So we've got some good things on this
Sounds
menu.
So good. Yeah. What can you never take off the menu?
Fried chicken. Fried chicken. Actually, fried chicken is one, and then we are doing a hoisin glazed oxtail with a vegetable fried rice and a ginger and shallot roasted bok choy.
So this is what you're talking about when you say global soul food.
Yeah. So it's also become one of the favorites. It keeps making the cut. Every time I say to my staff, you think we can take this off? They're like, no. So it's on there still.
Today. You glossed over the fried chicken. We got to go back to the fried chicken. What, any secrets?
Cast iron skillet is one. We use a great brand of chicken. You know, we are very, very much married to Springer Mountain chicken. It's local. It's just a great chicken. No hormones, no antibiotics, you know, naturally raised.
So you're making each, you're not just throwing it in the deep fryer.
No.
Wow.
No. We're taking in a huge cast iron skillet and we fry it up in the skillet. We'll finish it in the deep fryer, but it is fried out in the skillet. It marinates for at least 24 hours.
In buttermilk? What do you marinate it
in? No, we don't use buttermilk. We actually just use seasonings and herbs.
Okay.
A little bit of oil and just let it sit. And it just seeps all through the whole entire chicken. We do a seasoned flour. We pan fry it in the skillet. We've got it with a three cheese macaroni and cheese.
Oh God, I love macaroni and cheese.
We do
so much.
Sweet potato apple chutney, and then we have this thing that I've done for years called a collard green roll. So it is greens that are braised. We do turnip, kale, mustard, and collards, and then they're rolled in a huge collard leaf and then steamed. So it's almost like a grape leaf. It's cut on the bias, you know, so it is, you know, my personal interpretation of greens.
Oh, I love that.
I've been doing the same dish for over 20 years, and it has gotten real popular. We have people who just come in and order collard green rolls. Just
wow.
Celebrities that'll come in and just, I know who it is. You know, I want 5 collard green rolls to start. Yeah, and we serve it with the little pot liquor.
Oh, love the pot liquor.
Which is the liquid from the cooking of the collard greens.
Oh my gosh. You know, we're not scheduled to go back to Atlanta on the next radio tour, but we might have to make a little detour from the tour and come visit you and hang out. But I feel like I'm going to have to visit like 3 times just to try all those dishes.
Yeah, you do.
Or come with a lot of friends.
Yeah.
That sounds like a nice way to do it.
Yep.
All right, Deborah, we're going to do the speed round.
Okay.
You ready?
I'm ready.
Most treasured cookbook.
Ooh, Edna Lewis. Anything Edna Lewis.
Most loved kitchen utensil.
Ooh, kitchen utensil. Oh. It would be a whisk.
One food you would never eat.
Ooh, crickets.
Crickets. I think somebody else said that too. A song that makes you smile.
I'm living my best life.
Who sings that?
Snoop Dogg.
Favorite to-go snack. So this is like something you've always got in your bag or you always grab and go.
An apple. Yeah, an apple would
good
be
good answer.
It. Yeah.
All right. Last book you read or tried to read?
Michelle Obama.
Oh, yeah. I got to see her in Boston.
Did you?
On that tour. It was amazing.
I know it had to be.
I love her.
I do too.
If you had to be stuck on a desert island with any food celebrity, who would it be and why?
Hmm. It would be Guy Fieri.
I knew you were going to say that.
It would be Guy Fieri. You know, I've worked with him now a couple of times, and I really like him. I really like him. He's a good guy.
Who would cook on that desert island?
I'd probably cook. Yeah. Yeah. I would probably cook. Let him be the taster.
Well, Deborah, it's so nice to see you. I'm thrilled I'm going to get to see you in just a month's time. Please tell all our friends back in Atlanta that we said hi.
I certainly will.
Tell Tiffany we send our love.
I will definitely let her know.
We'd love to see that whole gang again soon.
Okay. We'll be here.
Good.
We'll be back. Yeah.
Good. All right. Take care.
Okay. Thank you.
That's it for today's show. Thank you to Deborah Vantrees for hanging out with us once again. If you'd like to hear more from Deborah, check out the Atlanta episode from our Future of Food miniseries, available wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're in Atlanta, make sure to visit Chef Deborah's Twisted Soul Cookhouse and Pours and tell them that the Bomb Squad sent you. Thank you to Hanson Brook Farm for supporting this season of Radio Cherry Bomb and for supporting chefs like Deborah. For more, visit hansonbrookfarm.com. Radio Cherry Bomb's associate producer is the one and only Jess Seidman, and our theme song is All Fired Up by the band Tra La La. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and the Heritage Radio Network. Thanks for listening, everyone. You're the bomb.
I'll have what she's having.
Hi, I'm Lindsay Collins. I'm the creator and host of FMB Radio, a podcast all about the silly side of food. Do you want to know who I think is the bomb? Daisy Ryan. She's the head chef slash owner at Bell's Los Alamos, which is a brand spanking new restaurant in California. She's an incredible cook herself, and now she's the head chef of her own family-owned restaurant. She's a mom. She's incredible. She inspires me every day. Check her out.